from the WEEI studios. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston. And Odyssey Sports Station.
This hour of the WEEI Afternoon Show is brought to you by Eagle Bank.
You know, going into this second week against Seattle, Seattle's got to come across the country.
Yep.
You know, they got a new head coach. The Patriots, if they play the game the way they played last week, they'll win. They'll win this week. They'll be 2-0. You know, mistake free. Get a couple turnovers. Win the special teams battle. Win on third down. They did every single one of those things. It looked like a stereotypical Bill Belichick type game.
The Afternoon Show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
The 5 o'clock hour we go here. It's WEEI Afternoons. We are live in our Fenway studio, the Ford Clubhouse Fenway studio, which is brought to you by our New England Ford dealers and the freedom of choice. Shop deals built for you on the New England Edition F-150 official truck of the Boston Red Sox. Red Sox and the Orioles playing the rubber match of their series here tonight as the Red Sox desperate need of a win. We talked with Alex Cora earlier on in the day. We'll revisit some of that conversation in a little bit. That was Julian Edelman, who you just heard a minute ago, talking about the Patriots and their possibility of going 2-0 and what that could mean for the team going forward. But real quick, I think we have to address the Shannon Sharp thing.
What's that now?
So if you didn't know, Shannon Sharp is probably now hiring his own crisis management team, as we were talking about billionaire owners.
What's
and so
the crisis?
Forth. Well, the crisis is that he went on Instagram Live mid-coitus with a young woman. Or I don't know if it was a young woman. Could be an old woman. I have no idea. Although the sounds didn't sound like too
Antonio
old.
Antonio Brown might even not agree with other aspects of your description.
What do you mean?
He accuses Shannon Sharp of not always being with women.
Oh, in this video?
No. In general, it's a feud they have that goes way back.
I see. Okay, I wasn't aware of that, but okay. And it sounds, part of it that I heard, and emphasis on the word heard here, because you can't see anything.
And you were very disappointed.
I kind of was, yes. I mean, I was promised some sort of tape here. I was thinking like, you know, Paris Hilton, Kim Kardashian, and instead it's like nothing. It's just, it's the phone pointed up at the ceiling. And off to the side, you hear sounds, you know, and that's basically it. And that was the whole thing. So I was a little let down by that. I got to.
What does it matter?
Well, what does it matter? Yeah. ESPN's owned by who?
Wait, so an adult in the privacy of his own home can't
broadcast it out to millions of people?
It was
no.
An accident. Accidents happen.
Was it though? Because it's not easy to go live on Instagram. Just so you know, I just looked at this. If you want to go live on Instagram, there is a process you have to go through. First, you got to hit the plus button, all right? And that plus button takes you over to post, story, real, or live. Then you got to tap on live, and then that's when you hit the button that actually goes live. So there are two steps prior to actually going live that you have to do before it broadcasts to everybody. And I wonder if perhaps Mr. Sharp did that on purpose.
Or maybe she did it on purpose.
It was his phone, though.
Yeah, but if it's there and it's open.
I suppose.
Right, she can just tap on Instagram and go live.
Brian, do you want to say something?
Well, I was going to say, was he on live before and it was just a continuation, or did the live start when in the middle?
Well, the part I saw.
Mid-coitus, as Arcan put it.
That's a fine question. I don't know the answer to that.
The 4 minutes and 47 seconds that I saw were in the midst. There was no like lead-in of weirdness.
Okay.
It was, they were already going at it.
No foreplay.
You just beat me.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can't speak to that. I don't know. I don't know what his technique is like. But there you go. Anyway, that's a big story out there.
Do you think you should be in trouble?
I don't care. I'm just saying. Disney probably cares. ABC and ESPN probably care. That's the type of thing that usually warrants some sort of on-air apology or something like that. They're a very wholesome, family-friendly company.
Didn't his co-host like talk about things he liked to do in that environment?
I believe he did.
Like things that are...
That's different. You don't think that's different from this?
That's more risque, or
I don't think so.
Things are we talking about?
I don't think what Stephen A. Smith said on a podcast or whatever you're talking about is the same as what Shannon Sharp just broadcasted to the world this morning.
He is claiming he was hacked now, guys.
Shannon Sharp says he was hacked?
Yes, he has come out saying his account was hacked, which okay, I feel like is the age old excuse.
That doesn't make sense.
What do you mean it doesn't make sense? How do you know it's him?
Well, I guess you don't.
You don't know the voices, you don't know the noises.
Well, wouldn't he come out and say that's not me?
I think that's part of
it. Saying I was hacked implies that someone took control of his phone or his account.
Right.
And then started recording him.
No, not him. It could be anybody.
But he didn't deny it was him, did he?
He was hacked. I think that's implication of the denial.
I mean, damn it, everybody knows that I'm a bottom feeder.
We do know that, Stephen A. That implies that someone maybe other than him hit play on the live.
I'm maybe it was her.
Maybe she hacked him.
Right.
Someone was getting hacked in that video.
I don't think it's an actual hackage. I think the excuse is like she did it accidentally.
Okay.
She was trying to close the app real quick and didn't.
Or maybe she was trying to be a star. You know, maybe she wanted to be recognized for her talents. I don't know. There's no way to know. I guess the story comes out. We'll keep you up to speed on it. But anyway,
bait.
Okay. That was not what I was hearing there in that video. Was certainly not fake. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Sounds I've never heard before.
That's you. You're not Shannon Sharp.
That's true. I'm not. Yeah.
I wouldn't compare it to your life.
I would not either. Anyways, the New England Patriots. Nice transition here. The New England Patriots looking to go 2-0. A team that many were expecting to not even get to four wins or five wins, I guess. If they start the season 2-0, that's certainly going to put a. You're probably not going to get a cash out on any of your betting apps for that 2-15 bet you had there. And I don't think anybody else with the 3-14s are going to be feeling good about that either. His team legitimately go 2-0. You think that's a possibility?
Absolutely a possibility, because it was a possibility that they go 1-1.
Right.
I think a lot of people were hopeful, optimistic. Week two, home.
People over. Had the Seattle yes. as a potential win before that right. first game.
Yeah. Didn't expect that first game to be a win, so you stole one. Can you double up on that? Can you still do what you're supposed to do, quote unquote, now, although not really, because you're a home underdog against another mediocre team, which is pushing me in a certain direction. Because you know I don't think this is a great team. Just like right. Adam Schefter kind of insinuated before he went on his Hall
of Fame. The Patriots or the Seahawks?
The Patriots. He's okay. Like, this is a team that's going to have downs, but it's better to start on ups, right? There could be a down this week. I think this team is going to have a lot of downs.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's disrespectful that you're a 3-plus point underdog at home against another mediocre team.
Right.
Actually, can you look something up real quick while you're over there? I'm babbling. What was the over-under for Seahawks wins this year? Because I don't think the Seahawks are a perceived that much better team than the New England Patriots. And yet, somehow, they're 1-0 with a first-year head coach and a Jag quarterback coming across the country, and they're favored on the road against a first-year head coach that's 1-0 with a Jag quarterback. And, oh, by the way,
over under 7.5 wins.
Okay, so three more wins.
Yep.
They were three wins better. I don't love it.
They were 9-8 last year, right? I mean, they were a much better team than the Patriots last year.
They were projected to be 7.5, so they're three wins better.
Right.
Okay, and I just stole a win. So nobody that predicted the Patriots to win four games thought they were going to win that one.
Right.
So you're plus one if you're a Patriot prognosticator. So I just think it's a little disrespectful to say the Seahawks are 6 points better than the Patriots.
Well, then you're really not going to like this. You know what all the sharp money's on?
Seahawks.
Seattle minus 3.5 to a, check this out, 76% handle.
Yeah, they know something.
They definitely know something. That to me is, and I know it's early in the week still. I mean, we'll see if that changes over the course of the next 2 days. But usually, you know, they get the info pretty quickly, and you see big swings like that. I mean, there's other big swings right now. Jacksonville against Cleveland at minus 3 is a huge swing there. Pittsburgh and Denver. You have Houston minus 6 in Chicago. That's got a big edge. Philly over Atlanta. Rams over the Cardinals. Like, there's a lot of big swings here, but the Patriots are, I should say, the Seahawks are definitely one of them.
That's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Like, am I wrong? Do you feel significantly different? Like, how do you feel about the 3.5-point home underdog for these two teams in this spot, this momentum, whatever you want to factor in there? Am I crazy that I feel like that's a little strong?
No, I don't think so. But if I want to be consistent here, I picked this as a loss when we did our exercise before the season started. I had the Seahawks. I thought they were going to win comfortably. And I was surprised as anybody else by that first game against the Bengals. I still believe that this Patriots team is not going to be a playoff team or even a 500 team. I think that's still way out there. I mean, we're talking, and it's going to take a few more wins before I start even beginning to believe that type of stuff. But you know, if I'm being consistent, then yeah, I mean, I could see the Seahawks coming here and blowing doors, absolutely.
I don't think either of these two teams are playoff teams. I don't think either of these two teams are going into this game with the guy who'll lead them to the playoffs next at quarterback.
Mm.
I think both of them are, these are placeholders. Now, Geno Smith's a longer-term placeholder than Jacoby Brissett, but I still look at him as kind of a placeholder, especially in that division. San Francisco 49ers? Nope, you're not as good as them. Are you as good as the Rams? I don't think you are. The Cardinals put up a fight against Buffalo. Maybe they're not as bad as they were. They have a quarterback that they seem to like. They have a slow-running wide receiver who's a rookie who, for some reason, can't get over 16 miles an hour on the football field.
Yeah, did you hear what Murray said today?
No.
He said, it's not my job to get Harrison the ball. It's like, actually, it is.
Whose job would it be then?
Right.
Who should I ask? You know? Who should I tally that?
Was the guy Grolsch? Whatever he was throwing the ball to. What was that guy's name?
Greg Dortch?
Dortch, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dortch.
Yeah.
Freaking Dortch. He got the fourth overall pick. Harrison, who, by the way, I mean, he may end up sucking. We'll see. Adunze, he missed practice today, as did Keenan Allen. So that's bad news for Caleb Williams for sure. But, yeah, I mean, listen, the golden age of wide receivers, I think, is still ongoing. There could be a slip-up this year. Neighbors, he's not getting the ball from Danny Dimes. And Adunze may be out, and Harrison may suck. So, you know, this could be one of those years. It's a course correction for sure.
Or it could just be different guys.
Could be that.
It could be Jalen Polk. He was wide open, and Brissett didn't find him. Maybe he finds him this week. And maybe they're feeling disrespected in the passing game. And they take it to that Seattle secondary that you don't think very much of, but I think is better than you think it is.
I've acknowledged that I was maybe jumped the gun there a bit on that one.
I agree with Edelman. To me, it felt like a winnable game coming into the season, and it still feels every bit the winnable game to me. Now, I don't know if I'm really leaning toward taking those points. 3.5 points is nice. What do you call that in your little business? The hook?
Yeah.
I like that little hook right there. Mm. That little hook helps. Because as Edelman says, if this team doesn't play a perfect game, but still kind of plays its game,
yeah,
the scoring should stay down. You should be able to run the ball. It might be a field goal game. We've all gotten ourselves convinced somehow after 1 week that Joey Sly is the guy, even though he's got, like, not the greatest career
percentage. No, he doesn't. But listen, the bar was pretty low.
Right. I mean, but he also, every field goal was like 36 yards. He didn't exactly have to prove himself. But, you know, there's more confidence in the special teams. There's more confidence in the defense. And I'm getting 3.5 points at home. And I got a quarterback who doesn't turn the ball over theoretically. I don't hate the spot.
Yeah, I don't really hate it either. I think that you got something there. But I still think that the Seahawks are a better team, and I still think that there is a very good – and as do the Sharps out there in Vegas, too. I think there's a good possibility that they come in and win by at least 3.5. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We got room for you here on the phone lines right now. We'll continue with our Patriots conversation. We'll talk a little Red Sox as well coming up next here, right after Brian Frazoco tells you what's trending.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Timeout Market. The Boston Red Sox lost to the Baltimore Orioles 5-3 last night at Fenway Park. Cutter Crawford earned the loss, giving up 3 runs on 7 hits over 6 1/3 innings pitched. Rubber match game of this series is tonight on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, perfecting the art of fresh. First pitch tonight is at 7:10. Nick Pivetta, he'll be on the bump for the Sox, facing off against Baltimore Orioles Dean Kramer. Our coverage of the game will begin at 6:10 with the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show that will be hosted by Joe Weil. Sox currently sit 4 games back of the final wildcard spot in the AL. Patriots are back at practice today as the team gets ready for their Week 2 matchup against the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday. That game kicks off at 1 o'clock. Pats are currently 3-point underdogs at home heading into the game. 49er star running back Christian McCaffrey missed the team's Monday night game against the Jets due to an Achilles issue, but according to head coach Kyle Shanahan, McCaffrey could have played if it had been a playoff game. Experience the essence of Boston's culinary and cultural scene at Timeout Market Boston, nestled in the Fenway. From live music sessions to food and beverage tastings and everything in between, Timeout Market Boston showcases the best of the city under one roof. I'm Brian Frazoco. That is what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it. Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Just in terms of, you know, the fact that the offense hasn't kind of been able to turn the corner, like sustaining last night, building on last night, surprised that it's kind of been this one?
I think everybody is, right? We're an offensive club, and at one point we were the best offense in baseball. You know, it felt like whenever we face a righty, you know, we had a good chance to score a lot of runs, and we haven't done that in the last month and a half.
That was Alex Cora after the game last night. Red Sox losing to the Orioles by a score of 5-3. They'll play the rubber match of that game here tonight at Fenway Park. is 7:10 start time right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI and the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Network. It's Nick Pivetta and Dean Kramer, your starters. Kramer, who's had an up and down year, similar to Pivetta, really, in a lot of ways. ERA in the low fours, not a great record. Pivetta, I think, has been very underrated this year and hasn't gotten a lot of run support, but you can say that about a lot of these starting pitchers, which is weird because, as Cora just said, at one point in the season, they were the number one offense in the majors, and it's certainly not the case anymore. It certainly hasn't been the case lately. You're even seeing guys like Jaron Duran start to slow down a little bit. He's had a rough month of September to start off here in the 11 days that we're in, but this has become, you know, important baseball games that matter. They're still technically alive, although I left them for dead a long time ago. This is a game like this in the upcoming series with the Yankees, and of course that one with the Twins, which we were talking to Alex off the air there, and he's got his eye on that one. You can tell they should have their eye on that one. That's the team that's ahead of them right now, along with the Detroit Tigers, who they don't play. The Red Sox now just need every break they can get. They can't give away at bats. They can't have bad bullpen games like they've been having. It seems like they have to clean up a lot of stuff very quickly.
I would start with the offense, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, the pitchers, I was just looking at Pivetta. There's a little Cutter, Crawford, and Pivetta are sort of the same in that keep the ball in the ballpark, and you got a chance.
Yeah.
Seems like when it goes sideways for them, it's because the ball exits the ballpark. That happened to Crawford last night. Do you know that was his 30th start? Did I hear Joe Castiglione say that on the way home?
That's Cutter Crawford's 30th start of the year?
I got to double check that, see if Joe got that right. I swear he said that was his 30th start. That sounds like a lot.
Right? I don't think he's missed any time, so...
Okay.
It could be. I mean, yeah, it could be. Let me double check that. I'll see. I don't think Joe would just say that.
No. That's why I trusted it and just took it for gospel and didn't check it.
That was start number 30 for Cutter Crawford. He started 23 games last year, appeared in 31. The year before that, 12 starts, 21 appearances.
That's a lot of starts in Major League Baseball.
It is.
167
innings so far.
That's a good year just in terms of giving your team a guy that goes out there every 5 days. But no, getting back, like, Alex talked about the energy and the way the energy is tied into the hitting, and we know their win-loss record is quite honestly tied into get more than three runs.
That's tied for first in the majors, by the way. George Kirby, Logan Webb, Luis Castillo, Dylan Cease, Seth Lugo, some of the best pitchers in the league, and Cutter Crawford.
See, I stumble into things all the time.
Yeah.
I knew as soon as he said it, I was like, 30 starts? That sounds like a lot, and it is a lot.
Yeah.
For him, that's for this team, and for Major League Baseball this year. So, no, that's a good thing, obviously, to build on moving forward for the pitching staff. But for tonight, score four runs. Like, yeah. Isn't that your priority? You know, we joked about it earlier that Gerard Mayo almost slipped and was going to tell Ramondre Stevenson's private personal goals to the media, and then he caught himself. But the very simple personal goal for this baseball team tonight should be get four runs on the board and see what we can do. Go from there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's reasonable. Who's starting for Baltimore that you want to dismiss? And
that would be Dean Kramer. I almost said Dylan Kramer. Dean Kramer. Long hair, hippie-looking guy.
Yeah.
I didn't dismiss him. I said he's had a similar year to Nick Pivetta. That's not dismissing him.
Or
I dismissed Suarez yesterday because Suarez got pounded by the White Sox last time we saw him, and I thought maybe it was the start of a slump and that, you know, the Red Sox could take advantage, and they got completely locked down by him.
Correct.
So that didn't work out the way I'd hoped.
So do you have any faith in the lineup tonight? Feeling good?
No.
Any like a little something in your gut, a little gut feeling?
No, but really it's up to what Joe Weil's thinking, because Joe Weil is the one with the power to jinx the team.
But I want him to say he doesn't trust the offense.
Right.
Every time he trusts the offense does nothing. Quite honestly, that's been more often than not over the last month.
I would agree with that. Here's your lineup. It's Jaron Duran, Rafael Devers, Willier Abreu, Tyler O'Neill, Yoshida, Wong, Cassis, Story, Rafaela, going up against Kramer, who is a right-hander. So, you know, it's a righty at least. They tend to struggle more with the lefties, but lately they've been struggling with everything. And that is unfortunate. Let me see if any of these guys have any good numbers against Kramer. Devers, 7 of 18 with a couple home runs against them. Yoshida, 3 for 7. That's about it. No one else really has much to speak of against them. Tyler O'Neill's never faced him. Duran's 1-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. Abreu's 0-for-2. Wong's 0-for-3. Not a lot of history here with this guy, but that can work to your advantage sometimes.
And they can't be this bad for this long, can they? Like, isn't there? I know
Red Sox hitting.
Yeah,
I mean, they just had a big night 2 nights ago. So.
Yeah, I know, but then they went back to their light hitting ways.
They did.
As Cora said, at points And their numbers were still, I don't know how you get those fancy screens you had up yesterday with all the stats and the press release on it and all the numbers and notes.
Oh, yeah, the propaganda machine. I don't know what channel that was. I'll try and find it.
Their numbers over the totality of the season are good. That's what he's pointing on. At times, we're the best offense in baseball in terms of hitting. And that lineup you just read on paper, doesn't it sound decent?
Decent, yeah.
Like you have Trevor Story. What'd you say? Story's batting eighth?
Seventh? Yes.
Seventh, eighth, somewhere down there?
Yeah.
Like when you have that, you got a $20 million shortstop. And I know he's not back, and Alex talked about his timing and
he's batting eighth, yeah.
And everything. But that's not a terrible lineup to put out there and feel like you should have a chance to score, I don't know, three or four runs and win a baseball game.
Did you ever find Tristan Cassis talking about becoming a butterfly?
I could not find it now.
Couldn't find that? All right, I'll try and find the actual quote because it's a weird one. But yeah, Cassis is another one who, I think that he's a good player, obviously. I think he's a weird guy, obviously. I wonder sometimes, like, if the urgency of it is sort of lost on him. You know what I mean? Because Cora was talking about that today. He was talking about, for a lot of these guys, you know, they're experiencing these important games for the first time. The urgency is there. They're experiencing that and sort of going through it and how important that is for their development going forward. I consider Cassis, you know, still a young player on this team who's still developing and still picking all that stuff up. Cassis says this is a slump, and it is a bad slump. Three hits in his last 31 at-bats. Not great. He says it's hard to justify hitting and thoughts and processes because a feel comes and then it goes and then you got to let it go and find something else that works. Okay. As hitters, we're always transitioning and almost molting like butterflies. So in my next phase right now, hopefully better at bats are coming soon.
The hell is he talking about? I mean, the end part I get. Hopefully better at bats are coming.
Hopefully better at bats are coming soon. We're all just butterflies, man, you know.
Without the words.
We're all just, you know, caterpillars in a cocoon, man.
Were you going down the road of you don't think he has the urgency?
I was. I wonder if that's even a problem for him, though, you know.
I don't think it is.
He's just someone who's the same all the time.
I think if you get to where you want him to be and this team to be, in a couple of years you're going to say the moment never gets too big for him. He keeps it even key. Like, that'll be a strength. And I can understand why, because they need a jolt right now.
Mm-hmm.
The guy to do that is Duran, in my opinion. He is the one that injects life into this lineup.
Yeah.
Based on, he's been
doing it all year.
Right.
Someone else picking up the slack for him would be nice, I would say. I mean, he's due a slump.
Or keep doing it.
Yeah.
You're the All-Star Game MVP. You're, you know, a big deal on this team. You know,
he is, but I can't remember the last time he had a slump like this. He hasn't had one all year. You know, that's sort of the point. Like, it's a bad time to have it, to be sure. But I don't blame much of this on him. Even when the offense went in the tank from the All-Star break, he was still hitting like 450. So, like, I'm okay with him.
See, I think it's Duran or Devers. One of those two has to be the ignition.
I think it's Devers.
The other guys can catch on. It's going to have to snowball a little bit. You're going to need Yoshida or Story or Rafael, other guys to chip in. But I think the actual spark to light the fire, if they're going to have a fire and this lineup is going to turn it around and this offense is going to turn it around, I think it's either Duran or Devers. And the Devers thing is weird. You know, Alex Cora was telling us earlier, when you start seeing him go to left center, that's when you know he's going to be locked in and he's been hitting sort of some weaker balls to the right side, too many balls to the right side. I just don't know if he has the pop right now. It just doesn't feel to me like he's hitting the ball Rafi Devers hard. At all, ever.
I agree with that.
Almost ever.
I'd agree with that.
And I don't know if that's going to come back late in the year. I know Alex said he's kind of past the shoulder thing, but I just don't know where his strength, his timing, whatever it is in terms of the pop with his bat. But to me, if they're going to have any hope, and I'm with you, realistically, there's another team in front of you. It's getting less and less likely that you are truly going to be in the mix. The
Tigers passing you sucks.
Yes.
That's a big...
And then playing well sucks, because now they're ahead of you. So now you got to catch them, and yet they're still playing well. We were talking about teams mired not playing that well. The Tigers are a team that now has a winning record in its last 10. They're starting to take advantage of some opportunities. But if you're going to do anything, I would say Duran or Devers. And you put it on Devers, and it's fair. He may, you know... $313 million.
He's your guy.
Certain responsibilities that go with that.
Yeah, and I'm not talking to the media. I'm talking about going out there and performing in crunch time in a pennant race, not a pennant race, but in a wild card race that you're still alive in. Now, you can be back tied with the Tigers by the end of the night tonight, right?
Sure.
Like, that could happen. You can't overtake the Twins until at least next week. I mean, you're four games back. It's going to take at least 4 days before that can happen. And that's sort of, you know, like you keep pushing it off. It keeps becoming this thing you're trying to attain. I remember listening to Ted Sarandis back in the day, and he would never give up on a season, you know? Like, you'd be listening to him, you'd be like, yeah, there's still a chance if all this happens and these guys all lose and blah, 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 blah. It's like, the magic number's one, Ted, you know? Like, you can only...
So you're saying there's a chance.
Here. And we're not there yet, but we're getting there. We're getting very, very close, and it's unfortunate. Do we have Alex Cora from earlier today? We spoke with him right here in the Ford Clubhouse Fenway studio. Do we have him talking about the offense? Because I think that there's... It's sort of, I don't want to say an admission there, but he was very forthright about
Excuse
it.
Me a second.
And I think that there was, in some way, you can tell, and Cora's been like this most of the year. He's not been afraid to sort of say what's wrong. He's not been afraid to sort of come to us or the media or anybody else and say, this is what's going on here. This is what needs to change. And he was talking very specifically about certain at-bats, certain players. And this is it. I mean, this is the time of year where you got to stop worrying about feelings and start worrying about the finishing at-bats and scoring runs. And the Red Sox are just having a hard time with that.
They are. And he talked about, you know, the idea, well, we've tried everything. We came in early. We came in late. We didn't come in. You know, joking about energy drinks and coffee, whatever. But I also think it's easier for him to do that. We talked a little bit about this earlier. Oh, he's got a young team and he sees the future. He's got a contract and it's also like they're not underachieving.
Right.
They were not expected to go to the playoffs. Nobody expected them to go to the playoffs.
They're about 500 right now. 81 wins would be above what people expect.
Now, I know at one point,
above the Vegas odds,
people were altering their expectations mid-season.
I certainly was.
Because they were in the playoff picture at that time. They were a playoff team. I think I told you and your former co-host, Adam Jones, it was stupid in June or wherever the hell we were to like, they're in the playoffs. Yeah, and there's a billion games to play in Major League Baseball. It's like saying the Patriots are in the playoffs right now. You want to do that?
I don't think it's the same as that. Talking about a team in June as opposed to a team after 1 week in the NFL.
Well, would you do it after? So June is not even halfway through the year.
If the Patriots go 4-0,
and I'll
talk playoffs. I'll start talking playoffs.
Really?
At 4-0, yes, absolutely. 4-0, I certainly would. That's a quarter of the season.
We will never have to have that fight, but it would be a fun fight to have.
I don't think so either. I don't think the Niners are going to let that happen, or the Jets for that matter.
Nope.
In fact, I'm not sure the Seahawks even will if we're keeping it funky. But yeah, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll get to your phone calls here in just a minute. I have an update here. No. Let's do another time on the update there. And let's go to Jim in Upton, who has a thought on the Red Sox roster building. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, how you doing? So I've always had this theory about when you build your team, you got to really know the players that you're signing. So every year, the Sox seem to be going into a funk around, you know, mid-August to September, and then collapses. But when you look at players individually over a long season, a lot of them are consistently the same throughout their career. So they might be cold in May and June. They get hot in August. They might get cold in September. And I don't know. I've always had this theory that GMs should be building their roster around making sure you balance out statistically hot and cold hitters throughout the year. Same goes for pitching. When you look at our pitching, all of a sudden faded in July and August and then had a comeback. So
yeah,
I've always wondered how they do that, you know?
That's fair enough. And listen, I don't know the math behind it or anything like that either. I think some of it has to do with conditioning. I think a lot of it has to do with injuries. I mean, listen, guys get hurt all season. And this year, we remember how the year started. Back in April, every single team's ace was injured to start the year. Mm-hmm. They all had elbow inflammation. They all had to sit at least 2 or 3 weeks. Some of them had Tommy John surgery, and we didn't see him again until, like, you know, the end of the year. And that's just the way the season started. It was ridiculous. You had all these injuries all up and down Major League Baseball. Now it seems like a lot of teams aren't really dealing with that, but they are dealing with burnout. You know, guys are burned out. Guys at the end of this regular season don't have that same kind of conditioning, same kind of energy. Maybe it's the injuries have something to do with that. Coming off of injuries, you're not at 100%. I don't know, but I mean, look around the American League. We talked about it with Alex. Every team in the American League right now is slowing down. Almost every single one of them, except the Tigers, I guess, which is unfortunate for you. But just about the Yankees, the Orioles, like all these other teams are all having a really tough stretch here into August and September.
I wanted to pounce on that call because I thought it was going down a road that I was going to mock, but I don't think it's mockable. I don't think it's dumb to say this team that Alex Cora has admitted he's kind of at wit's end why they fade in August and September.
Yeah.
I don't think it's dumb to maybe target a player or two in the offseason. I don't know who this is. I'd have to do a little research.
Who these people are, the best
that tend to get hot in August and September. Like Bobby Dalbec a couple years ago, right? Got hot late in the year. And I was a young player, but I'm saying
2021, I think. Yeah, right?
Yeah. If you can find those guys that
production is weighted towards the second half or the second, the last quarter of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would be the, because we're talking about, well, you don't think it's fair to put it on Durant. He played his ass off all year. He's been the spark all year.
Right.
Devers is who he is, whatever. He's got the shoulders. Blah. If there were a player that you kind of brought in knowing, oh, he's a notorious slow starter. We're going to have to work through some things in April, May, and June. But he's usually pretty good in August and September. I don't think that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. And I got to think that guy might be a niche value. Like, I don't know if you're having to sign him to some, you know, six-year, $120 million contract.
Right.
You can probably find some guys that take advantage of, I don't know, fading pitchers late in the year. And maybe he's not that good early in the year because all the pitchers are better than him. But when they start to get tired, he catches up to them.
Yeah. Last year in August, and Durant didn't play in September, but last year in August, he hit 192. And had a really tough month. The month before that, it was one of his best months. He hit almost 400 and was just lightning on the base paths when people started to really think that Durant could be something special. And then the team fell apart. Then they quit in September, and we remember how all that went. This year, Jaren Durant, since you brought him up, had a very strong April, mediocre May, great June, great July, very good August, and has had a rough September now so far. But, I mean, listen. That most people will take that. You'll take 5 out of the 7 months playing dominant like that. I mean, that's it's hard to ask the guy to be that good all year long.
This is where I don't have AI. I don't even really know how to use AI on any of these apps or whatever. But I would say to my, was it Grok on X, G-R-O-K or something?
Oh, yes. I've never used Grok. I think you have to have a blue check mark to use
Grok. Oh, I don't. Anyway, but I would say, hey, Grok, who are some of the best hitters in Major League Baseball in the months of August and September?
StatMuse might have that.
Over the last 5 years.
I'll ask StatMuse that right now.
Because I actually think it's a really interesting idea brought up by the caller, because that is what this team needs, a couple sparks late in the year.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's like David Hamilton, you know, gave you a spark at various points during the season. And like a player like that that you knew for whatever reason, his little niche was late in the year. You got it for me? I see you squinting at your screen over there.
I'm looking at it right now. Aaron Hicks, man. These are all, this is, Mookie Betts was one. Mookie Betts was,
I'd take Mookie Betts. August, you get September me Mookie hitter. Betts, I'll take him.
Last year, he was very good. Julio Rodriguez was very good in August last year.
You got any cheaper players that,
Freddie Freeman, you ever heard of him?
You got any players that are a little lower shelf?
Ryan Mountcastle, who is Baltimore. What's up with him this year? I don't know if he was if he got hurt or what his deal was, but he was a monster last year. Anyway, 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll continue with your Red Sox phone calls, mix in a little Patriots, little Robert Kraft as well, and we're also going a little bit over like we tend to do here on these days with games, as Joe Weil is in the house. We'll talk Red Sox with him before we hand things off to the Mass Mutual pregame show. That's all coming up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Esiason on the Greg Hill Show.
In your opinion, when would you put Drake May in? Because that's what we all want to see.
You got the Seahawks next at home, the home opener. You got at the Jets and at the 49ers, and then the Dolphins and Texans. I mean, that's who's who in the NFL right there. Somewhere in there, he's going to end up playing. I don't necessarily know that Jacoby is going to make it through all these games.
Miss Boomer Esiason on the Greg Hill Show. Listen to it on demand, anywhere, anytime. Download the Odyssey app and take Boston sports with you everywhere you go.
WEEI,
New England Sports Original. We're right back to it. Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
WEEI.
Every one of you contributed. I'm so proud of the new players, the new coaches. People had all the excuses it couldn't happen, but you all did it, and I'm spoiled now. I'm going to count on a lot more.
Just getting started.
But most importantly, we're giving you this game.
No, appreciate it.
Robert Kraft in the locker room after the Patriots' Week 1 win over the Cincinnati Bengals down at, what's it, Paycor Stadium? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Such a dumb name.
They paid him to say it.
I know. I just don't like it. It's okay when these companies do it, but if you have a lame name, then call it something else. You know, like Paycor is lame.
But they want their name in the stadium.
I understand
they
do.
That's what they're paying for.
But like TD Garden, they're calling it the TD Garden. It's not the TD Bank Arena. It's the TD Garden. Like they're at least trying to make it something cool. Paycor Stadium. I don't know. I just I didn't like it. What do you want?
Well, everybody bitched when it was Paul Brown Stadium. Like, you're the Bengals. You should sell it. Make more money. Don't be so cheap of an organization.
I thought it was great as Paul Brown Stadium. It's much better. Jesus. I think.
Never happy.
You don't think? I just said I liked it when it was Paul Brown Stadium.
Yeah, I don't. Paycor doesn't bother me. It's a company. Like, is that any better than Gillette?
I'm saying aesthetically, I don't like.
What about Gillette Stadium?
Gillette Stadium sounds much better.
Why? Because you like Gillette?
Yeah.
Because you're used to it?
It's a cooler word.
In 3 years, Paycor will roll off the tongue if
I don't think so. I don't think Paycor ever will. Paycor sounds like something, it's like you're getting fined or something. Gillette Stadium is much more aesthetically.
It's the razor's edge.
Than Paycor, I think. That's just this one man's opinion, you know, just old honk arcand over here with my big hot take. Anyway, any closing thoughts here on the Don Van Natta story, Adam Schefter's fierce defense of Robert Kraft and his Hall of Fame aspirations and this whole thing being a topic to begin with?
Did not see Adam Schefter's fierce defense coming.
Me neither.
I thought he would say what we had said. It's obvious he's a Hall of Famer. But I didn't know he would get so worked up. You know what that would have reminded me of is if I had asked Jonathan Kraft, do you think your dad should be in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
That same response is what I'd expect from Jonathan, knowing his personality, his loyalty to his father, all of that. Instead, I got it from Adam Schefter. It's out there now. I'll be interested to see sort of how that plays. And I do have the question as, who cares? I have an answer. Adam Schefter cares.
Definitely.
There's definitely a group that cares. But nationally, I don't know if a lot of people care. And does that influence the voters? Like, does a story like this influence the voters because now they're like, oh, shoot, the it's up. They're on to us. They know that we're blackballing him. They know that we're screwing him.
Maybe.
It always
but
pisses me off.
Isn't part of this story is that the voters are a little put off by all this campaigning. This is sort of more campaign in a way. I mean, it's not.
Oh, so this was a plant? I don't think it was a plant
by Kraft, but I think that the voters will look at it like, more from this guy? Really? We got a whole article about this now? Like, come on. We know you're trying to get into the Hall of Fame. Now it's all detailed and everybody's all up in our business. I think now that the rules have changed, this is the sticking point for me. Now that they've changed the rules about eligibility and induction between the coaches and contributors and owners and other people like that, now that they're not competing with coaches anymore, I think it's going to be a much more, it's already pretty brazen. Now it'll just be, okay, there's clearly something going on here. There's clearly some faction at work that is trying to keep this guy out of the Hall of Fame, and they're not going to quit until, you know, who knows? I mean, it seems like at this point, if that's where it goes, if that's the direction that it goes in, they split him up and he still doesn't make it and they still don't even make it to that first consideration round, then yeah, how else could you possibly explain it?
I think that's my final takeaway. This was a good thing for Robert Kraft. It brought attention to it in a non-packaged way, a way right. that I don't, unless they're really smart, this would be devious if this was planned. If this story was planted by Stacey James, here's what you do. You make me look bad for ruining it for years.
I mean.
But in doing so, that'll change the narrative and help him get in. Do you think that's possible? Because I don't.
That sounds like something they do in Succession.
Yes.
You know?
Right? Sounds like something like out of a TV show or a movie.
Greg has to go fall on the sword for something. And
right.
Like, you know, and here comes the other kids and they're all dumping on the one cousin. Like, yeah, that sounds like something a little far-fetched. But listen, this is how bad he wants to get into the Hall of Fame, isn't it? You know?
And Stacey falls on the sword for it.
Right.
Either way, I don't know whether it was planned or this is organic, something that ESPN came up with, however they went down the road of figuring this out. I think it's a good thing for Robert Kraft's candidacy.
Well, also think about this. When Wickersham and Van Natta wrote all those long form stories about, you know, the empire crumbling in New England, who do you think one of their main sources for those stories were? Who did they get a ton of information from? It wasn't Belichick and Brady. Like, those guys did contribute, you can tell, or at least people from their camp did.
Yep.
But who ended up looking great in all those stories? Every single time. Who ended up looking like, wow, this guy's really doing everything he possibly can. And it was different when it was those guys writing it as opposed to a 10-part docuseries with him in your face talking about, I was just trying to keep these guys together as best I could. Right. I did everything I possibly could. When ESPN, when Van Natta and Wickersham write about it, you expect there's some journalistic integrity there. Like, Kraft doesn't have final cut say over what they're writing. And I still feel that way. But that's, you know what I mean? Like, that was better for him. That made him look better than this does. And that certainly made him look better than the documentary did.
But who do you think this looks worse for, Robert Kraft or the voters?
I think the voters.
Me too.
Voters look
worse. And
that's
my point.
It didn't do Kraft a ton of favors, though. I mean, I think it makes him look kind of
I think Stacey kind of took the fall on this one.
Yeah, but who is he doing it on behalf of? Like, come on. Like, you don't think, I don't think Stacey James is out there just doing these things. And
Robert Kraft
has no idea about it. And he's just, I didn't know he's being so aggressive. Like, he knows.
A lot of it was packaged that Stacey didn't handle it well and the approach didn't work. But in the end, I think the voters looked the worst because everybody is looking at it kind of scratching their head and wondering, okay, so maybe he's annoying or maybe this is annoying, but doesn't he deserve to be in?
Can we get Stacey on tomorrow, you think?
I do not think he will come on.
Why not?
I mean,
you're friends with him.
I wouldn't say I'm friends with him.
You guys are acquaintances.
I've known him for 25 years.
I don't think he knows my name.
I bet you he does.
I think he's like, oh, yeah, that guy.
Hey, the afternoon show.
You had to pin him down and say, what's his name? He'd be like, Rich, he knows it. Something, man.
I bet he knows it.
We're all sort of like these, you know, the basic guy, you know. Like,
say something really offensive about the Patriots right here, and we'll find out because he'll call you before you reach your car.
Oh, yeah. Okay. 1-16 still on the table.
That's not offensive enough.
Sorry, Stacey. Yeah, I'll think of something worse. 617. We might have said it already today, to be honest with you. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. He is part of the story now. Like, it's it wouldn't be ridiculous.
It's a big picture in the story.
He's a huge part of the story. His face is all over the... What other PR directors do you know get written about like this in any other thing? The only other one I can think of, and he wasn't even a PR director. Remember that awful Dallas Cowboys story about the guy taking the pictures of the cheerleaders and stuff like that? Like, that's the only other thing like that I can even think of.
Well, usually they're really bad. In the scandals...
This isn't that bad. I mean, like, this is just
the Washington scandal. I think even the Arizona scandal.
Right.
The PR guy is kind of at least tangentially involved or whatever.
Yeah.
But this is sort of critiquing Stacey's approach and plan and the way he's gone about 12 years of promotional work. Yeah. I just think in the end, this is actually a good thing for Robert Kraft. I also think it's one of those that we're too close to. I think this will be forgotten in a few days.
Yeah. Surprising that this is such a big story on ESPN.com today. And my theory on it, which I think there may be some juice to, how much more relevant are the Patriots going to be this year than when they're 1-0?
Especially if Vegas is right. If Seattle handles them and they go to 1-1 and then the Jets handle them and all of a sudden you're 4-0 and they're going to the playoffs, is 1-3 and they're going to the first pick in the draft.
Yeah, can't put that story out then.
Take a turn.
I will say this, though. They go 2-0. They start the year 2-0. I'm not saying that's going to put Robert Kraft in the Hall of Fame, but the conversation that week, next week, is going to be not so much about, I mean, obviously you're going to talk about Mayo and whoever else played well, but all of a sudden, hey, Robert Kraft may have found something here. Robert Kraft may have hired another guy. And he went on and on. I pick my coaches and my employees. Like, I pick my marriage partners and blah, 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 blah. He's very into this relationship with him and Gerard Mayo.
Yep.
And that's something that, you know, he made a big deal about, a big whole speech about. If it looks like he has another home run here with that, maybe not a Belichick home run, but someone who is someday, you know, playing, competing in Super Bowls, considered a top coach in the league, then that reflects very, very well on him.
Yeah, I don't know if we can talk about those types of things for years down the road.
No.
But it definitely would help him. Hey, maybe even Bill Belichick would talk about the Patriots and Gerard Mayo in one of his many, 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 many media appearances.
Yeah, maybe.
They go 2-0.
Not really. He didn't mention it, and it was funny. I don't know if we have... Do we have the Lombardi clip? Brian, do we have that one? It's the Underdog podcast. Yeah, okay. So it's the Underdog podcast, and... Mike Lombardi was on as the guest. I guess they got tired of old Patricia there. Or maybe they rotate him. It's like the big show.
I think they probably rotate because they were both on last week, I believe.
Okay, so Belichick's like the big O and he's just got his
friends of Belichick.
Yeah, friends of
Bob. It's the Bob pod.
And Lombardi starts talking about the Patriots. And he says, you know, they really played well. It was a great game. They took care of the ball, played good defense. And then Bill couldn't have changed the subject any faster.
Yeah, like the Steelers. Let's talk about the Steelers. Let's talk about the Steelers. Mike Tomlin did that too, man. Mike Tomlin done that
alone. It sounds like we're exaggerating for effect. We really are. I mean, it was one thing to the other. Boom, boom.
This is a thing.
I heard him talking about
it. This is absolutely a thing.
He is reluctant to talk about them.
So,
and that reflects basically the Bill Belichick we remember, the tyrant Bill Belichick, who didn't want to hear it. He didn't want to hear anybody questioning him or trying to, you know, knock him down in any way. And this Patriots, them succeeding, you can tell, feels like it knocks him down. Listen to this.
I kind of felt like the teams that understood who they were early. I mean, clearly New England was not going to let Jacoby Brissett beat them, so they were going to run the football. And Cincinnati obviously didn't do a good enough job of making New England play left-handed, and that's why they start the season once again losing the opening game.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing in Pittsburgh, right? Pittsburgh and, and Atlanta. Pittsburgh.
Yeah, right, like Pittsburgh. Basically the same thing.
Why don't you talk about the team you used to coach? Matt, you used to coach. Oh, Mike, you actually used to be there too, so we all know a lot about the Patriots and Gerard Mayo. We were all around Gerard Mayo. They are not interested. He is
it's kind of the same thing in Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah, right.
Don't you feel like there was a conversation after they recorded? He had like, Mike, I thought we talked about, we're not talking about the Patriots.
We're not talking about the NEP.
Unless this was their way for, this is could be a Belichickian angle too. What do you mean we didn't talk about it? Mike just brought up the whole thing, and then we had a whole segment about teams that did good things and played the games on their terms and controlled the game. What are you people talking about? We talked about it right there. Because there was also, I didn't listen to the whole McAfee show. Apparently he teased it. When he teased Belichick coming up, he said something to the effect, we'll talk to Belichick about like the Patriots and Gerard Mayo's first win, and then they never...
Bill was like, no, you won't.
Oh, hell to the no.
Actually, I don't think you are. And sorry there, mullet guy, who's a big Patriots fan. You're not asking me anything about this team. You're going to have to ask me about Dak Prescott or whatever, whatever question he asked. That's when you knew. That's when you knew there was a talking to. When the Boston guy wouldn't even do it, it's like, okay, there's clearly something going
on. That guy has tattoo of a Belichick quote on his arm, and he couldn't even ask him a single question about the game.
Like, really?
This is a thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing.
Absolutely a thing.
617-779-7937.
Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah, Pittsburgh. Exactly. Pittsburgh and Atlanta, yeah, definitely.
617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll continue with your phone calls. And Joe Wiles here will get his take on the Red Sox must-win games from here on out, it looks like, especially tonight in the rubber match against the Baltimore Orioles. That's coming up next here on WEEI.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
WEEI.
WEEI.
New England Sports Original.